Today is December 15th, 2020, and this is episode number 35 of Blurred Laws and Life with me, your host, Richard Bush. On today's episode of Blurred Laws and Life, we have a lot to discuss. We're going to discuss several cases that are in the news, including the newest antitrust lawsuit that the U.S. government has brought, this time against Facebook, as well as a continuing discussion of the lawsuits, the unsuccessful lawsuits that President Trump and his campaign, and most recently, the state of Texas and attorney generals in GOP, Republican-controlled states, brought before the United States Supreme Court. The reason we did not have an episode 34 of Blurred Laws and Life was primarily because just yesterday, the Electoral College was set to vote. There was an attempt to prevent the Electoral College from convening and voting for the next president of the United States. And I wanted to wait until this episode of Blurred Laws and Life to discuss that and to see how this drama finally unfolded. It is not over quite yet, but it is, in fact, getting very close to the end. But before we get into this episode number 35 of Blurred Laws and Life, I have some very, very sad and depressing news to report. As fans of Blurred Laws and Life know very well, I am in a fantasy football league in which I have won it, for the record, several times. I am generally in the playoffs, and my arch enemy in that league, who I've mentioned throughout several episodes of Blurred Laws and Life, Robert Valdez, who is a big fan of Blurred Laws and Life, I will note, has been an Achilles heel throughout my tenure in this league, which has now lasted more than, believe it or not, 20 years. So to give you, and I know you're on the edge of your seat about this, an update on the tragic events of the last 2 weeks in my fantasy football league. I played Robert Valdez. I had beaten him once already this year, and I demolished him 2 weeks ago. I think the score was 161-70 or something. Absolute demolition. Unfortunately, we ended up tied, and unfortunately, despite the fact that I killed him twice, the two times we played head-to-head this year, he still had slightly more points than I did. Our records were the same. And so we ended up tied, but he got a bye week. He didn't have to play this past Sunday, while I did, because I ended up a few points below his score. So I was in the playoffs this past Sunday. One of my prime players, my running back, on the eve of the playoff game, tested positive for COVID-19 and was sidelined. Another of my players was hurt, and I'm not making excuses. Far be it from me to make excuses, but it was too much to overcome. And sadly, sadly, I was eliminated from the fantasy football league playoffs this past Sunday. A tragic turn of events. No one could have anticipated it. But yes, my season is over. And Robert Valdez will be playing this Sunday, luckily, having lost to me twice, still, though, undeservingly, alive. I now know how Donald Trump feels after watching Joe Biden defeat him in his mind illegitimately. I feel like Robert Valdez is an illegitimate playoff contender. I beat him twice, but yet he moves on. If he wins, we all know he is an illegitimate champion of the NGAFFL, which stands, by the way, for the North Georgia Fantasy Football League, because most of the players in the league are from Atlanta. So to all of you out there in blurred laws and lifeland. I hope you did not miss me being absent last week without a show, but I hope to make it up to you this week in our discussion of both the Facebook litigation, the antitrust litigation, where the U.S. government is trying to force Facebook to sell off both Instagram and WhatsApp, as well as the latest on President Trump's attempts to invalidate the 2020 election for the next president of the United States. So with all that said, and with tears in my eyes over my loss in my fantasy football league, let's move on to episode number 35 of Blurred Laws and Life. I thought I would start the legal discussion of episode 35 of Blurred Laws and Life with the latest in President Trump and his campaign's many lawsuits to set aside the results of the 2020 election. And then I will discuss the Facebook litigation after I discuss the presidential litigation. You know, I have to start off by saying something that I think is important. I've said this many times on Blurred Laws in Life, and I mean it. We live in the greatest country in the world. You can rise from nothing to something. You can rise from nothing to be the president of the United States. Literally, it's unlike virtually any other country in the world. And this past week or two, in my mind, has demonstrated why, another reason why, this is the greatest country in the world for all of our faults, for all of our problems. We have many. We've discussed them on Blurred Laws in Life, and I'm certainly well aware of the issues and problems we face as a nation and as a people. We are divided, obviously. The vote was divided. 73 million people voted for one candidate, 78 million people voted for the other. But the reason why I think that the events of the last few weeks demonstrate why we do live in the greatest country in the world is because of the legal challenges that were brought by President Trump and his campaign. In many countries, too many to account, the judiciary is in the pocket of the government. When one goes before a tribunal in many countries, you don't expect justice. You expect the government's will to prevail and judgment to be entered against or for a party based upon the whim or the will of the government. Not so in the United States of America. And the independence of the judiciary was on full display over the last few weeks. Rudy Giuliani and others brought lawsuits across the country, in Georgia, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Arizona. The list goes on and on. And they were before, in many cases, conservative judges, Republican judges. And yet, in decision after decision after decision, these Republican conservative judges, sticking by the rule of law, handed President Trump and his campaign defeat after defeat after defeat. And we all know that President Trump rushed to have a Supreme Court justice nominated by him and approved by the Senate to become a Supreme Court justice just before the election, to make sure that the Supreme Court was stacked with Republican conservative justices. In speech after speech after speech, President Trump made clear that he thought that the election, prior to the election even taking place, was fixed, was flawed, and that the court ultimately and the Supreme Court would ultimately get involved. And true to his word, just this past week or two, President Trump, through the state of Texas, his campaign and the conservative Texas Attorney General and other attorney generals from GOP-backed states, Republican states, brought a challenge to the election, challenging the result in other states, not Texas, but the states that mattered for the election, the disputed states, saying that those results were flawed and should be set aside. In many countries, the fix would have been in. We all know what would have happened. But in the United States of America, in the United States Supreme Court, the justices, for the most part, the conservative justices, including the justice that President Trump just nominated and pushed through right before the election, voted to deny the petition to challenge those results in those states. President Trump trumpeted that Supreme Court case brought by the state of Texas as quote-unquote the big one. He truly believed that by stacking the court with Republican justices of his choosing, he would get the result that he wanted. But they had other ideas, as did the conservative justices throughout the country, many appointed also by President Trump, who stuck by the rule of law and who ruled against the challenges by his campaign. That is significant. The founders of our country made it clear that there would be three branches of government in order to ensure that no one became too powerful: the judiciary, the legislative, and the executive. And the judiciary stood up and did what it was supposed to do and stuck by the rule of law and was not intimidated and rejected challenges that did not have any basis in fact or in law. And this is not a political show. I've made a concerted effort not to make this a political podcast. But I do have to say that President Trump and his campaign had every opportunity to point out the alleged fraud. They go on TV. We talked about this in episode number 34. They are creating this Orwellian society of just saying things without facts and people believing them to be true. If there were facts to support the allegations being made of fraud, I certainly would address those. And if they were colorable, I would support them. And I would support the challenges. But they've been unable to do so. It has just been rhetoric and hyperbole. And the decisions of the courts across this country, the federal courts, including the United States Supreme Court, over the past 2 weeks, speak loudly to all and should reassure all of us that we do live in the greatest country in the world. I've been a lawyer for more than 20 years now. I have practiced in federal courts and state courts across the country. I have plenty of issues with judges from time to time. I've had decisions that I did not like, that I did not think were supported by the facts or the law. So I am not suggesting that judges get it right all the time. I do not believe they do. And I am not suggesting that judges sometimes are not dishonest themselves. They are human beings. But the decisions of these justices and the federal court judges and the state court judges, sticking by the rule of law, they understood the importance that the election means to democracy. They understand that disenfranchising voters undermines this country. And the fact that they stuck by the rule of law, despite the pressure of the government, and despite the fact that many of these judges were appointed by President Trump himself, speaks loudly to why I say that this is the greatest country in the world, despite all of our flaws. So I thought it would be interesting to at least now go into one of the Trump challenges to the election results. In episode number 34, we went into a discussion of the Pennsylvania challenge by the Trump campaign and the decision by the Third Circuit Court of Appeals rejecting that. In the news this past week has been a decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court rejecting a challenge of the Trump campaign to the Wisconsin election. If you also recall in episode 34, I spoke about this Orwellian nightmare in which we are living, not just with respect to the election challenge, although it seems to be an example of it, but of this fake news and disinformation being propelled upon us, this propaganda that is believed by many people without factual support. And one of the examples I gave was this inundation we are receiving of fraud in the election campaign in order to make it appear that Joe Biden is an illegitimate president. So I thought it would be interesting to also look at the Wisconsin results in order to see whether this claim of fraud was being raised in Wisconsin. And the answer is, it was not. In 8 decisions, in 12 days, in 7 cases, the Wisconsin Supreme Court rejected the challenges by the Trump campaign to the election results. In rejecting the Trump campaign complaints about the Wisconsin election, the majority decision written by Judge Brian Hagedorn said that Trump's challenges to Wisconsin's voting laws, quote, come long after the last play or even the last game. Trump is challenging the rulebook adopted before the season began, end quote. The court went on to say, quote, striking these votes now after the election and in only 2 of Wisconsin's 72 counties when the disputed practices were followed by hundreds of thousands of absentee voters statewide would be an extraordinary step for the court to take. We will not do so. The argument was that the in-person absentee votes in Dane and Milwaukee counties were cast without the required application, but the court dismissed the campaign's logic, noting that, quote, both counties did use an application form created, approved, and disseminated by the chief Wisconsin elections agency, end quote. Also, the justices noted that the form in question was created in 2010 in an effort to streamline paperwork following the 2008 election and has been available and in use ever since. The justices stated that waiting until after an election to challenge the sufficiency of a form application in use statewide for at least a decade is plainly unreasonable. So once again, rather than be a challenge on the basis of fraud, the Trump campaign's main primary argument in Wisconsin was that there were forms that were either not filled out or the form being used was inappropriate, not that there was fraud. The Trump attorney contended that the clerks had broken the law specifically by filling in the addresses of witnesses on absentee ballot envelopes. However, with the support of Republicans at the time, the State Elections Commission 4 years ago told clerks that they could do that if they were able to confirm the addresses. In some cases, clerks filled in full addresses, but in many others, they added only part of the addresses, such as the city or the state. Trump also challenged the quote-unquote democracy in the park event held this past fall in Madison. On 2 Saturdays, the city placed poll workers in more than 200 locations to collect absentee ballots from voters who had received them through the mail. The poll workers also served as witnesses to those who needed them. Election officials said putting poll workers in parks amounted to having human drop boxes around the city. With respect to this challenge, just like the other one, the court said the time to challenge election policies such as these is not after all ballots have been cast and the votes tallied, but to do so before would have been appropriate if they were truly objectionable. Trump challenged the rules that allowed voters to get absentee ballots without providing a photo ID if they say they are indefinitely confined because of age or disability. The number of voters claiming that status increased this year, and Trump cast doubt on whether some met that criteria. With respect to this claim, the court found it was up to voters themselves to determine whether they are indefinitely confined, and that this process did not give Trump a way to throw out large numbers of ballots based on the theory that some people may have violated the indefinite confinement rules. Finally, the claim was made that in-person early voting had been conducted illegally in much of the state for over a decade. The contention was that state law required voters to fill out two forms instead of one. And the plaintiff in this matter maintained that his own ballot should be thrown out because he had filled out only one form as directed by the clerk. Again, the court determined that Trump had waited far too long with this challenge, since it had been a practice for nearly a decade, and even the dissenters on the court disagreed with Trump's claim that two forms are needed to vote early in person. So, as mentioned once again, in Wisconsin, just like in Pennsylvania, despite what we hear on a daily basis, there were no claims of fraud. It was all claims that administrative, technical voting requirements were not being complied with, and that this was a basis to somehow disenfranchise the voters of Wisconsin. The court, in numerous decisions throughout the past several weeks, including the one we just went over, rejected that claim, and as we now know, on Monday, the delegates of Wisconsin and all other states cast their ballots for Joe Biden to be the next president of the United States. I thought it was very important to bring these specifics to all of you. This is Blurred Laws in Life, and as we can see, whenever there are high stakes, there are creative, sometimes desperate arguments being made. And I do have to say that despite my statement earlier in the podcast, the Wisconsin decision was a 4-3 decision with three dissenting judges in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, three conservative judges dissenting. Luckily, the rule of law and the four members of the majority, including one conservative member of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, saw through the arguments by the Trump campaign and was not about to disenfranchise the Wisconsin voters. So I will just say again that the rule of law did prevail, and unlike many other countries where that would not be the case, it has been the case in the United States of America, and I think that these decisions that we've gone over during the past several weeks are perfect for Blurred Laws in Life and are important, some of the most important things we've discussed, because I don't think it is an exaggeration to say that our democracy was at stake, literally, in these judicial cases. Can you imagine what would have happened if courts in Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin had reversed the election results in those states and disrupted the electorate process and possibly anointed Trump, despite the election results, despite the lack of fraud, as the president of the United States? There literally would have been riots in the streets. It would have been nothing less than a coup. And this country would have been in literal shambles. So thank goodness that did not happen. The votes were counted. There were recounts, including in Wisconsin, where the numbers were confirmed, the same as in Georgia. And our democracy, stronger than ever, will continue. So also in the news this past week was the latest antitrust lawsuit brought against a big tech company. This time, the Federal Trade Commission and 40 states sued Facebook for allegedly illegally killing competition, and they demanded that the company be split apart. Specifically, they are asking that Facebook be required to sell off both Instagram and WhatsApp. In commenting on the lawsuit, Senator Richard Blumenthal, who is out of Connecticut, said, quote, "Facebook's reign of unaccountable, abusive practices against consumers, competitors, and innovation must end." Another senator called the lawsuits a necessity and said that Facebook's acquisition of nascent rivals was meant to be anti-competitive and they should be broken up. Just as I said when it came to the lawsuit against Google's parent Alphabet, I think that this lawsuit has very little chance of success. The statements made by those senators make it obvious that this was done because it is a politically expedient thing to do. It is in vogue now to beat up on these big tech companies because of their success. But once again, the rule of law, I think, will make this case a very difficult case to win. In order to win this antitrust case, in order to prevail and force the breakup of Facebook, requiring Facebook to sell Instagram and WhatsApp, prosecutors are going to have to show that Facebook bought Instagram and WhatsApp with the express purpose of killing off competition. They must argue a theoretical that consumers and the social media market would have been better off without the mergers. On top of that, before those acquisitions were blessed by the FTC, regulators reviewed Facebook's acquisition years ago and did not stop them. They reviewed the WhatsApp acquisition. They reviewed the Instagram acquisition. And guess what? They did not stop them. They gave approval for those acquisitions. So they'll have to explain why they changed their minds now. And courts are going to be very reluctant to impose the relief sought because of unintended consequences. Undoing mergers can oftentimes cause more harm to consumers than good. I don't know how the government is going to prove that Facebook acquired WhatsApp and Instagram with the express purpose of killing off the competition. Remember, WhatsApp and Instagram were not nearly what they were when they were acquired. Instagram, for example, was acquired for, I believe, about $10 billion. Its value has obviously skyrocketed since then, but that's because of the integration into the Facebook app, into the Facebook network. Would Instagram be what it is today without having been acquired by Facebook? Probably not. The same with WhatsApp. Facebook, in response to the statements by the senators in the lawsuit, said that regulators were in fact using antitrust laws to punish successful businesses. And of course, they plan to fight the suits. In addition to having to show that Facebook acquired WhatsApp and Instagram with the express purpose of killing off competition, they're also going to have to show that consumers would have been better off if the mergers with Instagram and WhatsApp had not happened. How are they going to prove that? It's literally a hypothetical. And once again, What is Facebook going to show? Facebook's going to show that Instagram and WhatsApp have grown exponentially since they were acquired. Facebook has invested tens of millions of dollars in these apps, and that investment and the integration into the Facebook platform has resulted in generating billions of users. But that would not have happened, I don't think it's a stretch to say, had they not been integrated into the Facebook platform. And as I mentioned, how is the government going to be able to explain that they blessed these mergers and now want to look at it again? It's too late. They blessed the mergers. They approved the mergers. They did not think that Facebook was acquiring WhatsApp and Instagram at the time to kill off the competition, or they never would have approved the merger. So it's very difficult to now undo what they approved once before. And finally, Facebook has integrated the algorithms of WhatsApp and Instagram into the Facebook platform, as mentioned. How is that possibly going to be untangled? Not only would it be very difficult, but how can a court order the untangling of this integrated system? So in all, I think this is just once again the government trying to punish success. I don't think they are going to be able to prove what they will need to prove in order to win this case. And to me, on blurred laws in life, this just strikes, as mentioned, as a politically expedient maneuver by the government and by senators looking for votes. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode number 35 of Blurred Laws in Life. These cases, the government's case against Facebook and the challenges of the Trump campaign to election results across the country, I think particularly the challenges to the election results are very important for us to understand on Blurred Laws in Life. I wanted our audience to understand what was and was not being asserted in these cases, because it is completely different than what we hear in Twitter posts and by others, Rudy Giuliani, associated with the Trump campaign. As I noted, this is a very sad episode 35 for your host, Richard Bush, on Blurred Laws in Life, because, as I said, I lost in my fantasy football playoff game this past week while my hated rival moves on because he enjoyed a bye week this week simply because he had a few more points overall than I did. We had the same record. Even though I beat him twice, 2-0 during the regular season, he moves on. There may be court challenges over this. He is or may be an illegitimate champion should he reign as the king of our fantasy football league this year. But I may have to just live with it. Having watched President Trump lose his judicial challenges, I don't think I want to spend the time or money challenging any championship by Robert Valdez. So I hope you all enjoyed this episode number 35, as I mentioned, and I look forward to speaking to you all next week with episode number 36 of Blurred Laws and Life. But before I go, one last thing. When we started Blurred Laws and Life, my Instagram page, the Blurred Laws and Life Instagram page, had 0 followers. Now we are closing in on 200 followers on Blurred Laws and Life. If you do the math, that is exponential growth. So don't forget to follow us on Blurred Laws in Life to get us over that 200 followers threshold. Take care and talk to you next week.